Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You are at the spot early in the morning. The place is here where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp. There she is right there. And the responses are never dull. We have Marie DeVoe from New York. We're going to talk about this DEI space. I see down here on next to her name, she's got her pronoun. Mm-hmm. She is she, her. I was saying, I am we, our.
I love that, April.
I'm just trying to be all inclusive. You know, it's a lot. But her bread and butter, and really where her focus lies, is on communication, learning and development, teaching us to be able to talk civilly, correctly, enunciate stuff, and really have effective communication, because there's so much that's broken down. People don't listen. They just want to be jaw-jacking. They just want to be talking. And what are they talking about? What's that song? Talking loud and they saying nothing. So she's going to help us get our vernacular correct and become a more effective communicator. Let's welcome her to the show. How you doing, Marie?
Hello, April. Good morning. I am doing fantastic. So girl, good to be here with you.
Well, I'm so glad, because, you know, if y'all knew the backstory, brains, you would be like, what?
Took a journey to get here, but that's how you know you have arrived. Okay.
That's right. The struggle is real. So tell my brains a little bit about you, how you show up in the world, precious.
Yeah. So really glad to be here. I mean, my journey is a little unconventional, which I think many business owners, entrepreneurs tend to have unconventional stories. But I didn't start out wanting to be in business. That was not my initial pursuit. I actually have a background in dance and thought I was going to be on the professional stage. But at a very early age, I found out I had back surgery. My spine does not grow in a straight line, right?
Oh.
It go to the left and to the right and do some
things. Isn't that called scoliosis?
Scoliosis, that's right. That's right. And so I ended up having back surgery at 12 years old. And so that really derailed my ambitions of performance. And so like any bright kid, I just put my nose in a book and kept my head down and studied. I ended up going to NYU for English and creative writing. And then I thought I was going to change the world and the world of nonprofit. And I got my first nonprofit job with my fancy NYU degree, and I was making $22,000 a year. And I said,
"Wait, what, girl? You was making the tutu?"
The tutu. And I said, "This ain't it. This ain't it. I can't even."
Not in New York. You can barely get a sandwich.
You can't do a lot of things. And so what I came to realize was people could do a lot of good in the world, but they weren't clear on how to be resourced in doing it.
Right.
And so that really had me start thinking more about how money moves through the world, how people get support for their ideas. And so I got a master's in nonprofit administration and management, and started climbing the ladder in the youth education space and education management. And so space for about 12 years, started training managers, leaders, really helping adults figure out how to be the adults in the room so that these kids could shine and thrive and have a space that felt good and nurturing. And that led to me really leaning into what it is to create leader conversations with leaders about what effective work culture looks like. And then, you know, I was, you know, trucking along, became the director of training and development for a large charter school network here in New York. Hardest job I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Oh Lord, that's the charter sector is very challenging. It is nonprofit on steroids. And I, you know, I worked a year in AmeriCorps, which I, up until that point, I thought that was the hardest year of my life. But working in the charter sector, it is very fast lensing. And because of the mission, they can get you to do almost anything, right? Because you're doing it for the kids. So it tends to be a very abusive space for adults to work in. And I had been there for 4 years, busting my butt.
Well, let me ask you, because here in California, you know, we had to fight for legislation to get charter schools.
Mm-hmm,
They're saying that, you know, it is more supportive of the student and the teachers They have a lot more flexibility. They have a lot more creativity. Are they telling us a big fat story?
Well, it's not ever as simple as we like to believe. And so, I come from the West Coast as well. I grew up in California. Mm-hmm. And in the Bay Area, but the charter sector is very complex, and education is very complex, because the public school system, we are trying to create something that is equitable and provides people a great education, and we are failing horribly. And so one of the alternatives is like, well, maybe we could do some private school that gets public funding. And that's essentially what a charter school is, right? But in order to do that, then we're all pulling from the same pot. So if we're now doing this private, half private thing over here, now there's less funding per head for the true public school students. And because we got this halfway private thing, right now they have different requirements. It's a lottery to get in. Not everyone can get that. So again, we're in a situation of haves and haves nots. It's very politicized, right? So even right down to mayoral candidates, right? You know, where do they lean on the charter school thing? You know, are we about school choice? And it gets very political. And while it can be very nurturing for the children, the adults are working from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. Right? We're working around the clock to create this completely new re-engineered educational environment. Wow. It's after school programs for the kids. It's Saturday school. It's all like someone has to be there to do those things. I worked in the operations side of things. So someone has to open the building, right? You need a custodial engineer around the clock if the kid's going to be in the building. Wow. What about all the health protocols? There's liability. You got little bodies that you're looking after, right? There's a community. The parents want to know what's going on. So there's a lot involved in that work. It is a sector that tends to target really young, ambitious people who want to change the world right out of school, right? So you got teachers who are 22, principals that are 25. They're babies themselves. They don't know what they're doing, right? But they run a school with 600 little bodies in it.
Oh, Lord.
Right? So it is a very challenging space to work in. And I was in that space for 4 going on 5 years, hardest work I've ever done in my life. And busting my butt, grew my team from scratch. When I arrived at that role, the network that I worked in, they had 8 school locations. By the time I left 4 years later, they had 42 locations.
Yikes.
All right. And my team trained everybody. And so it was hard. It was hard. Right. And I looked up one day, I wasn't sleeping well. I'm grinding my teeth at night. I had had my second child while I was working there, ended up in the hospital with kidney stones.
Ooh.
Right. And I looked up one day and my new manager looked me dead in my eye and said, you know, I don't even know what you do here.
Oh, to your face, girl.
To my face, straight to my face. I don't even know what you do here. And I said, you know what? Me either.
and as soon as I get out of here, you ain't gonna have to worry about it no more.
We gonna fix that right away. And so I left that work and really started coaching and consulting and just taking this career I had built in training leaders and managers and made it a private practice. And so that's the space that I operate in now. Of course, because of my own journey, I do tend to focus on how can we make work actually feel good for people, right? How could we change the culture of how, like, work should not be painful. It should not be stressful. It should not be keeping you up at night, right? This should be a space where we get to play and have fun and enjoy who we are and how we get to interact with people. And that's often not the case.
Well, you know what, and I say this with love, that's very idealistic, because just the fact of being able to have a job, people are in that mindset now where this is the great, the great resignation.
Yes.
Folks are just leaving, and I don't know what they're doing.
But you know what? It's interesting you bring this up, because, yeah, we don't know what they're doing, but does it matter? People knew, right? I think.
They eating and sleeping and paying $5 for gas or something. Girl.
work is a funny thing, right? To have meaningful work, to have a way you're contributing in the world, it's a basic human need, right? We need that, right? And I think a lot of people, especially in the midst of the pandemic, we were all locked in, boxed in, and started to look at, like, is this really how I want to be living my life? Is this really how I want to add to the world? You know, folks had to come to Jesus. Like, maybe this ain't it.
Right.
You know, and even if you don't know what the next thing is.
Look at education. Let's dial back to education just for a minute. It breaks my heart. Teachers and nurses are my favorite people on the planet.
Mm.
Okay? And they did not sign up to be, number one, a bodyguard or to be a bulletproof shield against all of this. They're not a nanny. They're not a nurse.
Right.
And they have to mandate wear the mask. Girl, you can barely get them little jokers to eat their lunch and sit in their seat and find their jacket. Now you gotta sit there and watch them and make them put the mask on their face. And then the teachers, they have their own health risks. They have their own families. You know, I just don't get it. Yeah, I'd be then walked out too, maybe.
It's putting people in between a rock and a hard place because you know the work needs to be done. We know it's important, right? But how could we make it so it's not killing the people who serve?
Well, and then too, who is that person that we're serving? You know, again, is it the politician? Is it the parent? Mm-hmm. Is it the student? You know, are we self-serving? There's a lot going on. And again, in this space of diversity, equity, and inclusion, brains, it's the DEI space. You better get down with the pronouns. You better understand because people want to be acknowledged differently. And I'd be so confused. You know, instead of saying, are you Mr., Ms., or Mr., now I got to ask you, you know, what's your pronoun? If you don't identify, I don't know. People have a right to be acknowledged. And we're not just talking about their sexual orientation. We're talking about, you know, their ethnicity. Mm-hmm. We're talking about their spirituality, their religion. It's so much when you introduce yourself, and it can be an HR nightmare.
Well, it's so interesting, right? Because, and I 100% agree with you. So much of this is, are we acknowledging people and are we being accountable for how we're showing up together? Right? Because I mean, one of the reasons that I left the corporate space is because there just was no acknowledgement. And it came to a point where I was like, you know what? And I tell my clients all the time, when you're not being acknowledged by others, you have to make sure you're acknowledging yourself.
Right.
Right. That's the first thing. If you're not clear about yourself and how it is you want to be acknowledged, how can you expect anyone else to know how to address you and to be with you? Right. So I think that's the first piece. But when we talk about, when it comes down to identity and how people want to be acknowledged, there's this delicate balance of, yes, I want to be separate and different. Everyone wants to be special, right? Right. You know, I identify, yes, I'm a Black woman of Afro-Caribbean descent. I'm from the West Coast. I'm a New Yorker. I'm a, you know, begrudging Democrat sometimes. You know, we have these
ways. That's a whole nother show, girl.
That's a different show.
Did you see the little party that they had at the Congress there? Everybody was civil this time. But nobody running for their life this time.
Again, that's another show. That's another show. But, you know, we have all of these ways that we like to associate and want to be seen in the world and how we come up with, this is my identity. This is who I am. And we want people to see that. We cling to that. And sometimes when we cling to that a little too tightly, we lose sight of how we actually get to be together in one community. Right.
But we dilute it. You know, I'll use example, the angry Black woman syndrome. Mm. That's not me. I'm not going to be the angry Black woman. I'm going to be the strategic Black woman. We have this thing, oh, she's too aggressive because we speak up for ourselves. And we don't sugarcoat it. You know, we're rude. We're not rude. But we give it to you straight with no chaser. People can't handle that. They want the sneaking and the conniving. Or another spin on it. How are people really acknowledged in this space of delineage? Everybody's working from home. How are you going to show your individual contribution to an organization? How are you going to show your productivity? You know, you used to be able to walk into your boss's office, have a conversation, you know, do the evaluation. Based upon that, you get a raise. It's different now how people are going to be sorted, edited, and filtered and acknowledged.
That's right. That's right. And it's interesting, too, because I think there's, you mentioned something there just in looking at some of the stereotypes or the tropes that we associate with different identities. And they're exactly that. They're stereotypes. They're not real people, right? They're these ideas that we've made up so we could put people in boxes. Right. And when you put people in boxes, right, you're not getting as creative and expansive as you could be with your thinking and with how the world really gets to operate. We've limited possibility if we're only going to keep putting people in boxes. We got to get beyond that.
Well, and then what do we teach our children? You know, the communication that we're having, the communication between millennials that I've had on my show and that I've talked to is a far cry from, you know, I think I'm a little bit older than you, just a teensy bit. But what are they talking about? They want clean water. They want video games. They want artificial intelligence. They want Tesla cars. They want to go to space. They're not talking about the color of your skin, how old you are, your ability or inability. The conversation is different. So when you're in this space too, you have to respect the younger generation that are going to be the leaders of the world.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely right. But I think too, what we're starting to see is that shift where people are starting to let go of those boxes and take a look at, you know, like, again, yes, we've created all of these ways that we identify and ways we want to be acknowledged. And at the end of the day, we all want clean water. We all want shelter over our head. We hope, you know, and so how is it that we can actually work together towards those common goals? And what does that get to look like? And yes, we get to acknowledge our uniqueness and the beauty of all of our varied experiences. And we also get to create something together. So let's not lose sight of the big picture goal, especially when we're working and collaborating together. I mean, you said it, right? Great resignation. People are quitting their jobs left and right, but to do what? And that's what a lot of people woke up to. What am I doing?
Right.
What is this all for?
Right.
And that's really what it's about. So often working with the organizations and even the individuals that I work with, it's about getting refocused on what are our values and what are our vision? What are we creating? And then how are we communicating that
right
to the people that we want on our teams? That's often where the breakdown is.
Right. And team leaders and leadership. So when you go into a company, what are some of the first things that you look at when you start to assess what their needs are and where the breakdown in the communication is?
Yeah. So my first question with companies, when we first start engaging with a potential client, we are really interested in understanding what is the current fabric of the culture you're creating and what is it that you desire it to be, right? How are people interacting with each other? What do you see as the missing link in terms of what shared values are, how people are interpreting that, how managers are showing up? Is there transparency? Are people being open? Vulnerable? Are they actually saying the things that need to be said? Or are people afraid? And oftentimes people are afraid. People are afraid, right? And to some extent, like rightly so, there is a lot of trauma in the space. There's a lot of hurt in the space. People are resentful about how it's gone up to this point, right? And so there's some unpacking we have to do. If we're going to be in community, well, then that means we need to make space for people to heal. And to come up with new ways of interacting with each other that aren't as harmful. And so those are some of the questions.
But the CEO said, I don't give a damn about none of that. You better get that those computers off that assembly line and worry about and get up in your feelings when you get off at 5 o'clock.
Right. And that is a way of operating. And those companies are purging talent left and right because people don't want to work that way anymore. People want to be seen as human beings.
Right.
Period.
Right.
I am not a cog in your wheel. I am a whole entire person. And I want to be, again, acknowledged for that. Right?
Do you think that that's more of a quote unquote American privilege? Because other countries don't even, that this is probably not a conversation that they're having on a regular basis. Again, it's get in here, get the job done. I pay you a fair wage and keep it moving. But all of this touchy feely and everybody's all up, caught up in their feelings. You know, do you think that this is something that we're doing? I understand what you're saying. I remember working for the utility company. And I went to a seminar. And this woman had a speech impediment. I think she was completely deaf. And she learned to speak. And she said, the days of entitlement have long gone. You used to work for a company for 20 years. You used to come in there and it used to have this family environment. You'd be able to talk to your boss about what was going on in your private life and they would make space for you. You could go home and check on your kids. But now it's all about the grind. And jobs are so different now because they're automated. We're going to be using artificial intelligence, cyberspace. People are, again, working remotely. They're working through this device that we're working through called Zoom. There's not that human touch. There's not that human interaction. Where do you see us in this space?
Well, it's interesting you bring this because yes, what we're talking about is culture, right? What we're talking about is culture. And the way even we're having a conversation about equity and inclusion in the United States is vastly different from how other countries are approaching the conversation, right? We all know-
they're having it.
Right. Well, and again, if they're having it, it's a different conversation. They're in a different point in the dialogue, right? And I tell folks all the time, everyone likes to say that America's going through this racial reckoning, right, as they called it. And I think we may be coming out of that. People aren't nearly as focused on it as they were immediately following the murder of George Floyd.
Right.
But even with that, the thing that everybody focused on was racial inequity, which we of course recognize is only one way that people identify in the world. We are multifaceted creatures. Like, race is one element. It's not all of who we are. And so for the United States, that's where we were focused, right? In other parts of the world, there are different things that they are looking at in terms of how people show up. You might have a country that is much more homogenous ethnically than the United States. So they're not talking about race that we're talking about race, because it's just, again, is a bit of a non-issue for them. Right. So they might be focused more on gender. They might be focused more on ageism or ability status. Or, like, again, people are so dynamic and complex. To try and narrow down what it feels like to belong to one marker, one piece of us, is just not doing the work justice. But even in that, it is a conversation of what is the culture, what it is that we're trying to create, what is the feeling that we want people to have when they're in community and collaboration with us, and how do we get there?
Right. Another breakdown in communication is between men and women. You know, men have always held these higher positions. Women are now taking back over the planet. I don't know if you guys got the memo, brains, newsflash. Women are taking it over. However, we're going to end up in the same kerfuffle if we don't get rid of the sexism, the ageism, the classism, because I have been tore up in corporate America by more women and pushed up on by more women than any man. And with the Me Too movement, you know, men are scared to, as my mother say, fart. They're scared to do anything. They're walking on eggshells. You have this woman that's in the corporate space. You know, she's got on the tight pinstripe suit and the red bottom shoes, but she's all about business. You can't laugh. You can't say anything. It's not the good old boy network where you could cuss and swear and go out and to the strip club and, you know, close a million-dollar deal. Again, it's the culture. How do women, in your, from your experience, fit into this space and bring their feminine energy and not have to pretend to be masculine or be something that they're not, to actually bring in what we have to make it a more homogenous and harmonious in work environment?
Yeah. So I love this question, and happy Women's History Month to you.
Yeah, that's right.
But I mean, you said it. People like to toss around the phrase that the future is female. And I laugh because I think people thought of it very literally, when I think what we're actually looking at is the way the world is working is moving to more of that balance between masculine and feminine energy, right? And the future is now swinging the pendulum back towards this idea of feminine energy and the emotional and the sensing and the feeling mind, as opposed to the logical, right, thinking mind. And so, so in that space, right, women now have to reimagine, right, how we get to show up at work. Because in the past, it has always been that the gold standard of leadership, the gold standard of what management is supposed to look like, it shows up in the masculine, right? This is how you have to show up. So a woman puts on a pinstripe suit and she puts on these crazy shoes that make no sense, right? In order to try and compete with how a man or the masculine shows up in the space. Right. But what we're starting to recognize is you don't actually have to change who you are to be a leader, right?
Wow, really?
Like, what about that, right? So from that standpoint, then we get to reimagine what leadership looks like, right? Even, you know, there have been studies done. If you look at Susan Cain, right? She has this beautiful TED talk about the power of introverts. Ooh. Because in the business space, the extroverts are rewarded and get to be seen as the leader, the one who talks the most, right? Who's the loudest, who has the boldest ideas. Oh, that's a good leader. They're not a good leader just because they're the loudest person in the room.
Right.
Not the same thing. And so we get to start looking at, again, across the human experience, what are the other opportunities for how people could show up? You could be an introvert. You could be the most soft-spoken person in the room. You could be the most thoughtful person in the room. You could be the person who leans into empathy, to authenticity, to vulnerability, and still be a fantastic leader.
Right. Where are they leading? They leading the fire department. Somebody's sick down there. Okay.
Now you know I'm really in New York. It's really, that's the sounds of New York, right? There are no birds and bees here.
I tell you, when I moved to San Diego, it was so weird when I went back and visited Los Angeles and I heard helicopters. I don't hear that here. Yeah. And I was like, oh Lord, you know, it's different. The world has changed so much. So you have children. How old are your children?
My son is 11. My daughter is 8.
What are you pouring into them?
Oh goodness. Everything and everything. My children, it's so interesting because this school year we decided to start homeschooling. And having a background in education, it has been eye-opening to me to be on this journey with them and really co-creating, what is it you want to learn? How can we find you the resources to do that, really expanding what it is they get to create? But so much of my relationship with my children is giving them authority and autonomy over their own lives, right? You're a fully functioned thinking being. And yes, I've been on the planet longer than you. So there might be some insights I could provide, but you need to learn how to lead your own life because one day mommy not going to be here.
Right. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I know some adults that could take some courses in that, trying to figure out their own life and where they are, you know, because people, number one, they don't listen. They just have turned the listening skill off. Not everybody, but a large portion. They become so angry and so combative. You know, they feel that they have to be right instead of being flexible. Mm-hmm. And I have done amazingly. I pat myself right on the back for that because I've gotten in a few situations and I've said, you know what? No, let me dial back. Like there's something going on with this big medium that they redesigned in our neighborhood. Since they've done it, it's caused 8 major accidents.
Oh, wow.
I got the people coming out and looking at it and all this kind of stuff. And my neighbor across the street, well, let's sue them. Well, you know what? Once you say sue, in any situation, folks shut down. They don't want to talk to you. They're not going to give you ammunition to fight them with. And then, too, who's going to pay for that? Mm-hmm. And then why can't we just start with a blank slate and learn to negotiate? See, in your space, a lot of negotiation needs to be happening, a lot of give and take, you know, mm-hmm. but also identifying, but knowing who you are, knowing what you want. People will throw out phrases, questions, and demands, and that's not really what they want.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You know, one of the tenets that we live by at High Tides at my company is collaboration over competition.
Ooh, exactly.
If you really start to look, what would this conversation sound like if we were collaborating, right? If it wasn't about someone winning, right?
Absolutely.
If you were actually trying to create something together instead of one person has to win and one person has to lose.
Right.
And so I think once people put on that hat to think, then it forces people to think about, well, what's our shared goal? What is it that we can both agree on and move towards instead of your way versus my way? What is our way? What is our way? And that's the nature of conversation, right? You can go and lecture people all day, but that's not a conversation.
Right.
You giving a monologue, getting up on your soapbox, that's not a conversation. And when you block people out and you refuse to listen to them, refuse to allow them to engage, right? They're going to shut down. They're going to become defensive. They're going to get triggered, right? It does harm that causes people to no longer want to participate and actually to become defensive. Right. And so you're absolutely right. It's about truly listening. And it's an art form that unfortunately many people no longer practice.
Well, let's talk about some fun stuff.
Okay.
So when you are not really trying to help people edit and filter and sort out their conversation, what do you like to do for fun?
Oh, my goodness. For fun, I love to bake. I am a big fan of all the baked goodies, which can sometimes be problematic. Okay. Sometimes you don't need the brownies and the cookies and the cakes and the muffins and the pie all at once.
Not all at the same time.
Not all at the same time. You know, maybe you got to spread them out. So that's one of my great loves. Also, I'm an avid reader. I love books. I love words, which I think just comes with the territory working and communication. So right. I'm always reading. And then of late, just going out for walks. And even living in California, I used to look at people like, why are you going hiking? Why are you just walking around? It didn't make any sense. But you know, after a year of, you know, being boxed in a major city, you know, oh, I want to go outside. I want to breathe some fresh air, like put my feet in some grass, you know? So those are the things that I look to when I want to let go, release, have some fun.
What brings you the greatest joy?
Greatest joy.
I want to hear about your kids, and I already know about your kids. I'm talking about you. What brings you your personal joy?
Wow. Probably dancing. Just complete uninhibited, like dance like no one's watching type dancing. Like it don't even have to be on, make no sense. Okay.
Well, I'm going to be looking for you on TikTok. How about that?
You won't find me there. You will not find me there.
So when you were in the world of theater and dance and you aspired to be a dancer younger, what was your genre of dance? Did you like jazz, ballet, tap? What were you there?
Yep. So I studied ballet from the time I was four, and really enjoyed modern dance. Was my really my favorite. But I did it all. I was on a hip hop squad, a performance squad, and I tap danced. I was on the drill team. I marched with the marching band. I did it all. I did it all.
Well, that's wonderful. If you were an animal, what animal would you be and why?
Ooh. Let's see. I'm gonna say. Immediately, the first thought that comes to mind is a gazelle. Just very, very graceful, elegant. And you can see gazelles in the wild after they've been attacked, they actually do the processing of the trauma and they shake that stuff right off and get
Wow.
up and move on.
Yeah, and they're pretty fast too. They're pretty quick.
Pretty fast, pretty
They're pretty
quick. Yeah.
quick. What's your favorite color?
Purple.
Purple. Why?
It's the color of royalty.
Okay, now look at that. She's a royal gazelle that likes to bake, that finds joy, in the little things, in the simple things of a good walk. You have been such a blessing, and I thank you so much because you are an informed and effective communicator. And that's what it's about, brains. It is about listening, it's about trying to understand. If you don't understand, ask the question. There's no dumb question. The only dumb question is the one that we don't ask. Try to look at things from other people's perspective, from their other vantage point or disadvantage point. Nobody wants, to be treated special. But that's why we have nonprofit organizations, is to focus on those areas where those needs are not being met, that there are underserved and overlooked communities and individuals that need that. So support your nonprofit organizations. You can do a little bit of all of that by contacting Marie DeVoe. Can you tell them how to get in contact with you?
Absolutely. You can find me on the interwebs at mariedevoe.com or also at hightidesconsulting.com.
High Tides Consulting. Well, let me tell you, there is a wave of love coming your way. Brains, go right here. This is the address. I tell you, right here is the podcast. It is the best on the planet. If you haven't gotten the message, you better get the message. I am a world-renowned leader because I seek out the best and the brightest. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to give you what you need after a 5-hour computer update.
I
Okay,
love
and then technical difficulties on Marie's side to get in here. But we're gonna make it happen because that's what we do. Movers and shakers. We're innovators, we're thought leaders, we're influencers. This is what a true influencer is. So I want you to appreciate it. Go in, have a consultation, have a conversation, check out her website, follow her on the web so we can get our communication right so that we can come back together and be decent human beings. In the workplace, take these skills home so that you can get along with your spouse, you can get along with your kids. Communication is something that we all need, even when we talk to our animals. They don't talk back, but they understand your emotions. So thank you so much, Marie. You are a queen.
Oh, thanks, April. It's been a pleasure.
All right, bye, brains.